case, George against Smith. Ms. Tate.
May it please the Court. My name is Christy Tate, and I'm appearing pro bono publico on behalf of petitioner appellant Larry George. The United States Supreme Court in Strickland has directed reviewing courts, when evaluating a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, to consider the following: whether trial counsel's unprofessional errors so undermine the proper functioning of the adversarial process that the trial cannot be relied upon as having produced a just result. In this case, Mr. George's trial counsel's professional error, that of allowing the complaining witnesses' false testimony about his heterosexual orientation, stand without a single follow-up question to explore or impeach that testimony, was so unreasonable and caused such prejudice to Mr. George that it cannot be said that his guilty verdict may be relied upon as producing a just result. This claim should be evaluated by this court under the general standard appearing in 28 U.S.C. 2243, which requires that the matter be adjudicated as the law and justice require. The general standard applies in this case because the Wisconsin Court of Appeals did not adjudicate this matter on the merits. In Canaan versus McBride, this court explained that the Seventh Circuit will apply the general standard in absence of a state court decision on the merits. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals grouped Mr. George's ineffective assistance of counsel claims into several categories, and for each category, the court went on to list each claim belonging to each category. This failure to impeach Mr. Studi about his alleged heterosexual orientation was not listed. Instead, the court issued a cursory statement which supposedly included this impeachment claim. That statement merely said that all other of Mr. George's claims were substantially inconsequential and did not disturb the court's confidence in the trial court's outcome. Turning to the substance of counsel's failure, the Eastern District of Wisconsin has characterized counsel's decision not to ask a single follow-up question or to impeach Mr. Studi's testimony that he was heterosexual as both reasonable and not prejudicial to Mr. George. However, the record does not support either of these conclusions.
Let me come back to the standard of review on this, the failure to impeach branch of the argument. As I understand what the state court said about that, the state court said it had been defaulted because Wisconsin law requires proof at a post-conviction hearing about what the witness would have said had the additional questions been asked, and that evidence was not in the record. Do you have a response to that? I mean, your reply brief says at page 14 that indeed this wasn't developed in state court. Well, why isn't that the end as a procedural default?
In terms of the procedural default, you're right. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals found that there was not a witness who was brought forth. And in that case, that's still not an adjudication on the merits.
Well, of course not. If the state finds a procedural default, it doesn't adjudicate the merits. But when it finds a procedural default, there's just no federal review at all.
And Your Honor, in this case, even if this court decides that the general standard is not applicable here, even if you decide to apply the standards of AEDPA in 28 U.S.C. 2254, Mr. George can still show that there was a substantial denial of his constitutional right to effective assistance of counsel. And what we also know from this post-conviction record...
This is where you lose me. If the issue has been defaulted by not being properly developed in state court, there's just no federal review. The case is over. Now, it obviously isn't your fault that it was defaulted in state court. You got into this at our request much later. But the case as it comes to you has got this procedural default in it, and you seem to concede that at least the failure to impeach line of argument was indeed defaulted. So I don't know why that just doesn't bring this federal issue to an end.
Your Honor, I'm not conceding that the issue was defaulted. The Wisconsin Court of Appeals made the determination that the witnesses were not, the proper witnesses were not called. But when they went on to describe which claims were subject to Mr. George's alleged failure not to call the right witnesses, they didn't list this claim as falling into that category. The category where the wrong witnesses or the inappropriate or where Mr. George allegedly failed to call the proper witnesses were in order to prove certain defenses, the failure to cross Mr. Studi about his drinking and drug use, the failure to produce jail inmates to impeach Mr. Studi, failure to locate other motel guests. Nowhere in that category does the Wisconsin Court of Appeals include this failure to impeach Mr. Studi about his alleged heterosexual orientation. Moving on to the substance of the counsel's error, during the post-conviction proceedings, counsel admitted that he was informed that Mr. Studi had had prior homosexual relationships, and he admitted before the trial ever began, he was concerned that Mr. Studi's sexuality might become an issue. He also testified that his primary strategy would be to discredit the testimony of Mr. Studi. And in this case, there were no eyewitnesses. This is a case that came down to Mr. Studi's word against Mr. George's word, and Mr. George did not take the stand. Therefore, both the state's case as well as Mr. George's defense relied on Mr. Studi's testimony. We know that the court signaled this testimony about his heterosexual orientation was relevant because the trial court overruled an objection based on relevance. Counsel also admitted in post-conviction proceedings that it would have been potentially beneficial to impeach Mr. Studi or at the very least explore his sexual orientation on cross-examination. Yet we know counsel did nothing. He stood silently by while the state used that false testimony to invite the jury to make two critical inferences. The first inference is it was the state's burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that in the sexual assault case there was non-consensual sexual contact. By using this testimony that Mr. Studi was heterosexual, the state was able to argue there's no way a heterosexual man would ever consent to homosexual activity. Because there's no other witnesses and no other evidence, that's how the state was able to prove one of the primary components, non-consent. The second way the state used this testimony was to prove that Mr. Studi was credible. Even though he had made several inconsistent statements on the stand, the state argued there's no way that a heterosexual man would stand up and admit to something as, quote, humiliating as homosexual activity on the stand. Why would a heterosexual man do that?
I hope he wouldn't admit to homosexual activity on the stand. The thought of this going on in open court is striking.
Agreed. Therefore, the prejudice in this case is clear. And if you have no further questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Ganser.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. As counsel for Mr. George has reframed the issues that have been presented to the court, the state's position has been somewhat simplified from what it might originally have been. This court, Your Honor, Judge Easterberg, you raised the question that was initially certified in the authorization for this appeal to proceed as whether or not there had been a procedural default. Let me address that question simply because I believe it can easily be answered. The State Court of Appeals, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, properly concluded with respect to the petitioner's claim of ineffective assistance of counsel in his trial counsel's failure to impeach the victim's testimony that he considered himself to be a heterosexual male by failing to call witnesses who allegedly would have testified otherwise, presumably, it is suggested, through testimony about prior homosexual contact with the victim. The State Court of Appeals concluded in a rather summary fashion, which I think was understandable given the veritable laundry list of claims of ineffective assistance of counsel that Mr. George had raised in his pro se post-conviction motion, the State Court of Appeals concluded that that claim of ineffective assistance of counsel fell into a category, I think it's clear from their decision, of claims that my lawyer was ineffective at trial in failing to present the testimony of other witnesses. That claim fell into a category in which the court said, your claim fails because given a post-conviction motion hearing at which you could have shown who those witnesses were and what they would have testified to, and thus presented the court with a factual basis for determining the second prong of Strickland, was their prejudice from the failure to call these witnesses at trial. The court said, we can't decide it. We can decide it. Your motion fails. The burden is on the defendant to prove under Strickland both deficient performance and prejudice. Effectively, the court ruled, even if we assume that your counsel was engaged in defective, his performance was deficient in failing to call certain witnesses at trial, we don't know what their testimony would have been. We cannot assess whether that testimony, had it been presented, would have made a difference in this case.
Have those lines ever been offered? Affidavits, for example, from other people?
It is, to no court, Your Honor, no. It has not been provided by way of offer.
Your view is it's not simply that it wasn't offered in the way the state court required, but that it's never been offered.
It's never been offered in a court, Your Honor. That's correct. This matter has never come before. It was not referenced in the district court. Most importantly, of course, it was not referenced in by way of offer, proffer or otherwise, sworn or unsworn, in any material filed with the state courts in Wisconsin. So we are left in
I want to be clear. I wasn't asking just about the state courts in Wisconsin. I was asking about the federal record. If the record in state court is undeveloped, one can, in principle, have a hearing under 2254E. Now, you may take the position that the requirements for that haven't been satisfied, but I was just trying to say, ever, in the federal record or the state.
To my knowledge, Your Honor, no. The record contains no such reference. And in that respect, I should point out there was a motion by the defendant for an evidentiary hearing in this case, which was denied, rejected by the district court, and that is not an issue that the petitioner has pursued on appeal.
There was a statement, though, that there was some homosexual contact with two people, was there not?
Yes, there was an allegation.
Yeah, an allegation.
There was an allegation.
Other than that.
Exactly. So we're in a situation in which that we, frankly, in the world of claims of ineffective assistance of counsel, courts often find themselves in, where an allegation, unsupported by affidavit, unsupported by sworn in-court testimony, that a particular witness should have been investigated, a particular witness should have been called, but we don't know what that witness would have said, what that witness would have presented. And on too many occasions, the bare allegations, unsupported by affidavits in a motion, are made, an evidentiary hearing is held, and the witness that we are told, sometimes identified, sometimes not, should have been called, should have been presented, never appears. And thus, claims die as they should because the defendant simply cannot discharge his burden of showing the absence of this testimony was prejudicial. Therefore, the deficient performance, presumably, of my counsel in failing to produce this witness cannot be shown to have been prejudicial. But, of course, we're in a circular kind of state here. If no such witness exists and we're left to speculate whether the witness does, how can it be determined, how can we, with real reliability, determine that counsel was deficient in not calling a witness whose existence and whose testimony we know nothing about? So I think this matter has been, it was in terms of, at least on the question of was counsel ineffective by failing to impeach the victim by calling other witnesses who allegedly would have testified to prior conduct of the victim? That in itself, of course, raises a question about whether that testimony would have been admissible under Wisconsin's rape shield law. We think, in all likelihood, it would not have been, but we don't even know what that testimony was because it's never been presented. And thus the court, I believe, properly concluded the motion seeking a determination of ineffective assistance of counsel by counsel in this regard had to be denied because no evidence was ever presented to support one half of the showing that had to be made under Strickland. Now, moreover, let me just briefly, I think that speaks, that included within my comments about procedural default on the issue of was counsel ineffective for failing to call witnesses who might have impeached the victim, there lies as well the state of Wisconsin's response to the claim that counsel was ineffective in this respect if the merits of it were reached, which is simply that no showing was made by the defendant that counsel was ineffective in this respect. We don't know. The failure to present evidence of what such witnesses, assuming they existed, would have testified to, both led to a procedural default on the claim in the state courts that is meaningful in a federal habeas case because it bars consideration of the claim, and two, even if it did not constitute a procedural default, it simply is a failing of the defendant to show in the state courts that there was ineffective assistance of counsel, that there was any prejudice resulting from this alleged deficient performance. The only other question before the court that has been raised by the petitioner is that trial counsel was defective in failing to object on grounds of the Wisconsin rape shield law to three questions that were asked of the...
No need for you to cover that, given the Wisconsin court's holding that the objection would not have been well taken had it been made.
Not been well taken, and that's the very simple answer to that. Thus, we're
at... It's a question of state law.
It's a question of state law that isn't subject to review in a federal habeas proceeding. Your Honor, you raised a question, or acknowledged, or noted, rather, that counsel in the reply brief had acknowledged that new defense counsel representing Mr. George at his post-conviction motion hearing in the state courts had not presented at the evidentiary hearing any evidence from any other witnesses who might have challenged what the victim testified to about his heterosexuality. Not only was that conceded by the petitioner in his reply brief, but I note at page 16 of the reply brief, opposing counsel acknowledges that post-conviction counsel's decision not to present impeaching evidence at the post-conviction hearing, assuming that any such evidence existed, and for reasons we've already described, it hasn't ever been presented, that the decision not to present that impeaching evidence was an ill-conceived decision by post-conviction counsel.
Thank you, counsel.
In essence, we're in a sort of a cascading ineffective assistance of counsel error here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Tate?
Thank you. While the state is correct that the Wisconsin Court of Appeals did reject some of Mr. George's claims on the grounds of failure to call the appropriate witnesses, as well as prejudice, in both of those instances, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals went on to enumerate which claims were included therein. I've already discussed which claims were included under the failure to call the appropriate witnesses, and I've noted before that the claim that trial counsel did not impeach Mr. Studi on the question of his sexual orientation was not included. Surely the Court of Appeals could have included that. Additionally, in terms of the claims that were rejected because Mr. George failed to show prejudice, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals went on to label two claims under that category, his failure to introduce a knife or phone records from the hotel and his failure to call witnesses to testify as to whether Mr. Studi was disabled. In neither case did the Wisconsin Court of Appeals include the claim that we are arguing here today. And if there are no further questions, I'll rest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. And.